there's no Greek words in Hebrew, okay? But the Septuagint is a Greek translation. So if you have the Septuagint, what you can do is you can see where are these words used in the Septuagint, okay? Now there are some really interesting places where the word magoi, the wise or wise men, is used in the Septuagint, okay? And those places are things like the wise men of Babylon in Daniel chapter 2, okay? So when Daniel is in Babylon and he is put in charge of all of the king's administrators, they're referred to as the wise men. And in the Septuagint, they're called magoi or magi. Okay? They're called the magi. Right. Now, if you remember from one of our previous Bible studies, when Daniel was there, Daniel lived in Babylon for like 80 years. Okay? And he survived several kings, a couple different empire transitions, and he was one of the most powerful men in the empire. It makes sense to think that it may well be that the Magi were actually successors to Daniel in Babylon. Okay, it's possible, you can go on to the next slide, that Daniel became so powerful in Babylon that he was the head administrator, the sort of lead bureaucrat, and trained so many people that there was a school of devout people there who were still faithful and practicing some kind of Judaism that were still awaiting the coming of the Messiah. Now, the heavens declare the righteousness of God, right? Now, we think of that as a metaphor, but the scriptures say that God put all the stars in their place, and all these other ancient peoples looked at the stars and said, you know, oh, look, there's our gods up there, and there's a story of this god, and there's a story of that god, and there's a story of this god. And the Magi saw a star and said, that's a sign. We need to go and see the birth of the Messiah. We need to go worship our Messiah. So maybe there's something to that. Because, you know, one of these days I'm gonna find some way to show this. Now that we have the technology to do it. There's a really interesting documentary called Bethlehem Sky, where this guy has this really interesting program. It's a astronomy program that you can go look at the night sky from any point of view at any place. But the interesting thing is you can go back and look at it at different times. So this guy with this really good computer went back and looked at Jerusalem at different times and looked at what the night sky would look at in 1 BC, 2 BC, 3 BC, all these different times. And there are some really interesting things happening in the night sky in Jerusalem at the time. So I don't have anywhere near the capacity to describe it because it's been a while since I've seen it. But it's a really interesting video. It's an interesting documentary. One day we're going to watch it, maybe on Epiphany, because it's really interesting. Anyway, so these magi come from the east, which, by the way, Babylon was definitely way east of Bethlehem. So they start heading that way. It's very much possible. By the way, the other instances where you find magi or magoi used is the prophet Balaam and also the Egyptian sorcerers who try and outshine Moses when he comes and tries to trick Pharaoh or tries to convince Pharaoh to let this people go the first time. All right. So let's see. All right. So they said to him, this is when Herod says, hey, can you tell us where we should go? The scribes and the Pharisees, the chief priests, say, well, you know what? The Messiah is supposed to be born in Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it is written by the prophet, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Now this is from Matthew 2, 5, and 6, but he's quoting Micah. Okay? And the important thing to realize here is, thus it is written. All right? Now keep in mind, Herod doesn't know this. Herod's got to ask his people, hey, where's the Messiah supposed to be born? Where is he going to be coming from? How am I going to find him? And they're the scribes and the chief priests, they're like, Bethlehem? Yeah, Bethlehem. All right, so they look it up, but Matthew quotes Micah. So again, we have a fulfilled scripture. All right, so they go and worship. Now, hold on to that for a minute. We've talked about this a lot, okay? We talk about this because this is a special feast for us. We always celebrate the Epiphany. So we always have talked about the fact that the three kings, who aren't really kings but are magi, they bring gold, frankincense, and myrrh. We talk about the significance. We talk about the fact that they're in a house. They're not in a manger. They're not in a stable. That Jesus is probably a year and a half to 2 years old. That, you know, this is not something that has shepherds and animals. And Joseph is probably working at his trade by now. This is not the same story. Or it is the same story. But it's not the same glimpse that we get in Luke's version. Okay? Luke is, we get the story of the birth. And then 40 days later, we get the story of the purification in the temple. And then 12 years later, we get the going back to the temple for something else. This is a different time frame. This is totally different events. Okay? So we're gonna look at those different events. Okay? So, but then we get the flight into Egypt. All right, so again, an angel of the Lord appears to Joseph in a dream. This is a recurring thing. We get the angel of the Lord appears to Joseph in a dream like three, maybe four times in this passage. All right, it continuously happens to him. All right, and why does this appear? Why does this happen? That it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, out of Egypt I have called my son. This is a fulfillment of Hosea 11:1. Okay. Why did this happen? This happened so that, one, the Messiah would be protected, and two, prophecy would be fulfilled. This is the answer to these questions. This is Matthew saying, you know all these things that you've wondered about for all these years? Answer. 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 All right, so Massacre of the Holy Innocents. There's really no historical record of the events depicted in Matthew 1, 16 through 18. Why not? Well, considering the size of Bethlehem and the children who were targeted for execution, some estimates place the number of children murdered in Bethlehem that day at no more than 20 children. Okay? Bethlehem was a small town. The small town, Herod said, any male younger than 2 years, kill. That may have been 20 children. Okay? Now, absolutely beyond any doubt, if yours was one of the 20 children, that would have been an unfathomable, horrible tragedy. Okay? It would have been just absolutely, unimaginably horrible. But there was no mass communication, no mass media, no nothing. There was no evening news, no nothing. And chances are, if you were a soldier, you probably didn't ever want to talk about that again. So it may be that after it happened, people didn't really want to talk about it a whole lot. And really, considering some of the really despicable things that Herod did, it might not have been a real big blip on his radar. And then something to keep in mind, and this is just, we'll put things in perspective, okay? Hold here, we're going too fast. Some of the numbers about abortion in Jacksonville say that every year in Jacksonville we have about 8,500 abortions a year in Jacksonville, okay? Which is not really a high number compared to other cities of our size, okay? And they're going down, thankfully. But if you divide that up, that's about 23 abortions a day, okay? So, looked at from a certain point of view, we have a slaughter of the innocents every day in Jacksonville. So, just keep that in mind. All right. Now, of this, Matthew says, then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah, saying, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation, weeping, and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted because they are no more. Excuse me. Pardon me. Okay, so Ramah, what is Ramah? All right, well, Ramah was a halfway point between Bethel and Jerusalem. It was a little north of the city. It was basically a waypoint where the Babylonians stopped and took all of the exiles. Basically, it was one of their sort of last stop before they took everybody off into exile. And basically, when the Babylonians sacked Jerusalem and they took all of their exiles and took them off into the north, that was the last point they stopped and took everybody off. So if you were not one of the exiles, that was one of the last points you ever saw your loved ones. Okay, that was where you saw your people leaving. And Rachel was the wife of Israel / Jacob, who was without children for so long, who basically said, give me children or I'm going to die. Because she had a heart for children so much. And this is one of those things that, you know, with her children taken from her, she was just absolutely comfortless. And, you know, this was seen as a fulfillment of that prophecy. All right. But ultimately, they would come back to Nazareth. So we have the return to Nazareth, because again, what happens? We have an angel of the Lord appear to Joseph in a dream. That formula again. And upon the Herod the Great's death, his kingdom was divided up into between his three sons. Archelaus received Judea, Samaria, and Idumea. Herod Antipas received Galilee and Perea. And Philip II received Etruria and Trachonitis. And of course, you all know where those are. Don't worry, I got this. All right, so Archelaus received, it's easier for me to get to over here, all this pesky music equipment. Yeah. So, all right, Archelaus got this area in green here, which is Judea, Samaria is in the north, and Idumea is in the south. All right, now let's see here. Herod Antipas got Galilee and Perea. Perea is this little purple area down here, and Galilee is the purple area up north. That yellow area in the middle is called the Decapolis, which is Greek for 10 cities. And then that orange area is Etruria and Trachonitis, which goes to Philip II. Okay? So, That's how it was divided. And so basically the angel says, that Archelaus is the son of a gun and you don't want to go there. So stay out of there. And instead he goes to Galilee and goes to Nazareth. And he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, which it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophets, saying, he shall be called a Nazarene. And there Matthew is quoting, yeah, nobody knows. It sure looks like it, he's quoting something, but it's not any passage that anybody can identify. Okay? It's not one of the 12 minor prophets or the 5 major prophets, or we can't put a finger on this is where it comes from. So what is it, what does it really mean? Well, what does being a Nazarene mean? Well, being a Nazarene can have 3 meanings. Okay? One, well, it means from Nazareth. Okay? So cue the music, Scott. I was thinking of, take a load off, but never mind that. Anyway, pulled into Nazareth. Never mind. Anyway. All right. Or it could mean one especially dedicated to God, as in Samson. All right. Samson was a Nazarene. All right. Not able to shave your head. Don't touch any dead bodies. Don't drink any alcohol. That's a Nazarene. Okay. You can see that in Judges chapter 13. Or... this is the really interesting one. It has the same linguistic root as the branch, which is in Isaiah 11 and also figures prominently in Zechariah chapter 3 and chapter 6. There's this messianic figure called the branch, which is Nazir in Hebrew. Well, one like the branch would be like Nazarene. So... It's very strange. I mean, basically, for us, for your average, hey, you're completely new, never heard this before, let me give you a Bible, you start reading through it, you read this, you think should be called a Nazarene. Huh? It must be that he's from Nazareth. Okay, there's a prophecy about him being from Nazareth. That's cool. Okay. Now, to a Jew who read this in the first century... he's like Samson. He's dedicated to God. He's from Nazareth. Okay, and he's the branch. This is what Isaiah talked about. This is what Zechariah talked about. This is what those weird stuff that Zechariah was talking about when he had the vision of the branch and talked about the branch coming forth and the root and all that. Oh! To them it made sense. All right, this is also why some of this stuff doesn't pop up in other places, because they weren't trying to witness to these people. Okay, there is something to be said here about knowing your audience and speaking to the people and using their language. Okay, so next week we're going to talk about the beginning of Jesus' ministry, his initial events and encounters in his ministry, and then we're going to talk about the Sermon on the Mount. Okay, so. I have such a frog in my throat. I'm going to hand off to Father David and let him pray for us tonight. So, tag, you are it.